Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders bringing Broadway back to life. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Uzo Aduba, the star of Lynn Nottage's new Broadway play, Clydes. Aduba, who's appeared on stage in shows including the Broadway revival of Godspell and a London production of The Maids, will be familiar to TV audiences from her Emmy-winning performance as Suzanne Crazy Eyes Warren in Orange is the New Black, and more recently as the therapist Brooke Taylor in the latest season of HBO's In Treatment. In Nottage's new comedy Clydes, Aduba plays the title character, the proprietor of a roadside diner that employs the formerly incarcerated. The actor is in the virtual studio with me to talk about second chances, her own personal sandwich nirvana, and why the role she plays in Clydes is a little bit like playing Jaws. Hey, Uzo, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me today, Gordon.
Yeah. So one of the things that struck me about Clydes is how funny it is. I feel like Lynn Nottage, the playwright, can be... We tend to think of her as a more serious playwright because some of her better-known plays are like, you know, Sweat and Ruined. But like, you know, by the way, Meet Vera Stark is a very funny play. And like this play has its own kind of... Like, there's a kind of antic comedy to it, and there's a little magical realism going on occasionally. Like, it's got, it creates a world that, you know, if you're expecting something more like Sweat, is sort of unexpected. Tell me a little bit for you how you explain what the show is to people, both in terms of what it's about and what the kind of tone is.
Sure. You know, I think this is a play about second chances, second time around. And it's a play that takes place at a rest stop diner called Clydes, where they specialize in a variety of things, but in particular their sandwiches. And as the employees are building their sandwiches, they're also trying to figure out how to rebuild their own lives. And make their way into this new world as returnees from prison. And you said something so right on, you know, when you set that as the backdrop, these are characters who are returnees, just coming out of being part of the prison system, you would think that would be an entirely sober, serious story that you would be getting. And especially when you link the name Lynn Nottage to it. But I think really what makes Lynn a genius and such a brilliant writer is that ease and the facility that she has within her wheelhouse to bring all the shadings and sides of real life together. You know, life is not only ever dark, there is light. And I think she does this really brilliant thing of bringing comedy into the piece to remind us of that, that as they're finding their way into this second chance, second life, that there is light possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And was that tone, was like the tone of the world and the kind of, you know, flourishes, like there's pyro at a couple points, like it's very, it's like there's stuff going on. Like, was that tone set as you got in, or was that a thing that evolved as you all rehearsed and kind of found the world in rehearsal?
Yeah, well, the pyro was definitely set. I don't think
sure. Yeah, you can't do that on the.
We don't stumble on pyro.
Yeah.
Kate Worski definitely had our director. She had that as part of the world from minute one, which I thought was really exciting. But yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of cutting and chopping and knives in this play, and they're very, very sharp knives that are being handled. And we are also in this play balancing on that razor's edge as well. And I think that is intentional within the writing, you know, balancing your existence between the left and right side of light and dark, joy and sadness, all of this, which I think was the exercise of the rehearsal practice, the rehearsal process, excuse me. It's funny until it's not, you know, and really figuring out for our each of our characters and the journey of the play when those moments occur, you know, of levity until we're talking about the truth of the system, the truth of what got us here. How do we get out of this? And then it can dance right back into, you know, something like Montrellis describing, played by Ron Cephas Jones, you know, a sandwich that feels like it might only exist in the heavens, you know? It's just, it's really, really, that was, I think, mostly the practice. And then I think we also had, for me, you know, figuring out how Clyde, someone like Clyde, gets to be the way that she is.
Yeah. That's actually one of my next questions is actually because she's so complicated, right? Like she is in some ways so generous and in some ways kind of nasty, right? Like how did you find your way into that complicated person that she is?
Yeah, you know, I really started thinking about life and what a woman, a person like Clyde's has had to push up against from minute one of existence in order to even occupy this much space on the side of a road on the side of Old Pike Road, a place that people pass through. They don't even stay with her. What small little bit of real estate she holds, and especially as herself a returnee, it may help me to understand or believe that I don't think she's mean. I think she's just someone who has been trained, conditioned to survive. And has had, you know, she says this thing in the very beginning of the play that she's been poked by her mother, you know, with her fingernails. She tells us from the beginning that who she is and how she came into this world, that her own mother used to poke her just to see if she'd cry, which means she's not. She already had those walls in place long ago. And I think that for me informed what I know to be true for a lot of people who every second, every minute of their life existence has to be explained, justified in some way. What that can harden or look like a hardening and shape you into becoming. But really it's just trying to survive, because what I know for a fact is she has a heart, because why would she make it her business to employ all of these people? She doesn't have to, she could employ anyone. But she chooses instead to put people in job positions who've been through such experiences like hers. And that really sort of brought to life to me the the complexity of who this woman is, that it's not just me, you know, she's just trying to do the best she can with what she knows.
And how did the role come to you? What appealed to you about it?
It came to me over email from my agent. Could you imagine? Pigeon. No. it came to me from my agent to take a read at this part to see whether I might be interested in playing someone like this. I've been really desperate to come back to do something on stage for some time, and the timing hasn't always really aligned. And when I got the play, and I was looking for to do something different too, very different, and that would prove challenging. And so when I got the play, I first saw Lynn Nottage's name, and I was like, well, we're already halfway to yes. Like, we're already nearly there. And then I saw that Kate was going to be directing as well. And that really excited me because I remember when Ruined was playing at MTC, I went and saw that play three times because I was so blown away and so in love with the story and the performances and the direction. And I saw Sweat. I'd seen Sweat. And I was blown away as well by that. And I've been blown away by Lynn's work forever, whether it's Crumbs or Vera Stark, Fabulation, you name it.
Right.
And so then this woman, when I saw this character, I was like, oh my gosh, this, I don't know if we've seen this woman get to hold space before. And I would really like to try and find a way to fight for her and do my best to try and defend her.
Mm. Yeah. And has that been a challenge?
Yeah. I mean, when I was reading it, I was like, whoa, those are some tough words, you know, like to say.
Yeah.
But again, it started rooting into, why dreams, you know, it has been hard because I actually see Clyde as like the biggest dreamer, you know, like in my imagination, this is someone who, you know, maybe if life had handed her a different set of cards, would have gone into, you know, fashion or creative direction or something like this, had big, big dreams, big, big sights, and understands the danger of dreaming, which is such a tough thing to say out loud. And so the thing of survival, I also would layer in that I think of her sometimes as a teacher, that she's, what I fight for her is that she's really just trying to keep people from feeling having the experience that she had of having her dreams dashed.
Yeah.
And when I think about it from that lens, the intention is good, even if the execution is horrible.
Right.
You know, she is really trying to help, you know, in some way, because she knows how hard it is out in the world.
I'll have more with Uzo right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSMusical.com.
Great
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And now, here's more with Uzo Aduba. The play initially premiered in 2019 at the Guthrie, and it was called Floyd's then. And then, you know, 2020 happened. And among the things that changed in the play is the title change, because, you know, the name Floyd, I imagine, carried too much weight for this show. What other ways do you feel like the show lands differently now than it might have in 2019?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think a couple ways. I think, you know, the show, the character now, what was once Floyd's is now Clyde's, now is played by myself, a Black woman, which I think the show hangs on a different net, you know, especially when you're thinking about the interactions between Clyde and Jason. And moments where she's saying things like, I'm not mean, I'm in charge, you know, and what sort of, how language that he says bounces or maybe hits differently, where he's talking about feeling, you know, he can't walk down the street without feeling like everybody's hating on me, and saying it to a different tone, front-facing room than perhaps had been said. Before it had been said before, that rings, I think, differently. I think also between then and now, I think also some of the things that Letitia, Carrie Young's character, brings up with regard to Jason may differently. I think
Jason, I guess
even
we
just
say...
from a
Sorry, I just wanted
Jason
to
is played
just, it. Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to say that Jason is a character who comes in sort of covered in white nationalist tattoos. It's that like tall white guy covered in white nationalist tattoos. And he is in a room full of people of color.
Correct. Thank you for that. Played brilliantly by Edmund Donovan as well. Right. I think those things hit differently. And then I think even just from like ensemble makeup, it's nice to see in this coming back to Broadway, a company that looks like the world, you know? And I think people take that, take stock of that, take account of that. And that each person, and I say it all the time, I think this is a remarkable, remarkable cast who each have their individual superpowers that I think are so beautiful and so wonderful to watch. They were just awesome to watch in rehearsal come to life. And it's like that thing that only, you know, Reza Salazar, who plays Raphael, brings can be brought by him, or that thing that Ron Cephas Jones, who plays Armand Trellis, can bring is brought into it. And it's just wonderful to witness and to see so many different faces, voices occupying the same space, coming together to tell a singular story well.
Yeah. One of the things that, you mentioned, you were talking about all the other cast members. Another thing that's striking about the show is that you play the title character in the part and in the play, and yet Clyde, for quite a bit of it, sort of cedes the stage to these three younger characters and sort of their journeys. And I wonder if you, I mean, and then Clyde sort of, you know, takes center stage in sort of her own moments. And did the ensemble appeal of, did the ensemble feeling of that appeal to you? Because there's something really interesting about how we get to know Clyde in terms of, like, first she's this, you know, presence kind of looming over these three folks. And then we get to learn more about her.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, the ensemble appeal definitely. Yeah. The ensemble element definitely appealed to me, for sure. I feel like that's the exciting thing about the, I mean, we have that in other mediums too, but it, that's the exciting work, I think, of like engineering, putting together theater pieces. So I was definitely in. The last play I did was, you know, a three-hander ensemble piece that I loved that experience as well. So I really love that, like, feeling the mechanics of making something together. And even though, you know, she's off stage for good sections of the play, and it made me think of Jaws, actually.
Because she's definitely present, right? Like,
it made me think of Jaws.
Yeah.
Lot, you know, like, the whole movie is about a shark, but we don't get to see it until the last 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's titled Jaws. We know people are having the effects. We see the effects of Jaws. And then you get to see Jaws at the end, you know? It's not until, like, the final 5 minutes that you're like, oh, wow, that's, you know. And, but there's a real power in that that I think Lynn does really well, is, like, there is a lot of conversation about her had, so that the audience has to imagine what else is happening on the days that we're not present to see Clyde, until you see her in action. And I think that's an exciting thing. It made the work of trying to bring to life a lot of what is talked about with her in those scenes, an exciting challenge, you know, where it's like, you know, I wrote down all those descriptions that they have for her. She's like a little horny dude. She's stronger than she looks. She's got lucha libre moves, you know, she's a gatekeeper. She's a beautiful woman, you know, all these things that make up who she is in their eyes, and then figure out how to move within them when I come on stage.
Yeah. You alluded to this a little bit earlier, just being back on stage at this time as Broadway is getting back up and running again. What's it like being back on stage at this time and, like, being in front of people? Like, what's the feel for you in terms of, the audience, at least when I saw it, was extremely warm and very responsive. What's it been like for you?
It's been amazing. I mean, I think we all feel it, you know. The great feeling of something that we always just, I guess, supposed thought would be there to be back. And that's not to say that we, you know, any of us took it for granted that Broadway would always be there, theater would always be there. But I don't think anybody could fathom that, like, this thing that everybody works in the rehearsal room, goes through tech, goes through previews, does 8 times a week, Monday dark, lights up, you know, in Times Square, just would be gone. And for such a long time, you know, for such a long time, it just never seemed possible. And I think you don't know what you're thirsty for until it's either gone or it's placed in front of you. And it's been incredibly amazing to see that come out of this time that we've been through, that people like community. And one of the few art forms that exist where you can have community is the theater. And I think that these houses are so full and so loving and so generous is a reflection of that community, both on stage and off, frankly. And to be part of it at this time is filling to the soul. It reminds me why I do this. And it is incredibly humbling to be a part of the number, you know, of huge shows that are getting to be, to open and play to the community.
You mentioned that you were eager to get back to a play. What did you miss in particular about it?
Well, firstly, rehearsal, because I love rehearsal. I really enjoy rehearsal. Yeah.
And you don't do it much in TV, right? You don't get a lot of TV.
No, there's not really, a lot. Certainly nowhere near the length of what we have in the theater. I love rehearsal. I love it. There are just so many opportunities to try something. And it's just really exciting to be from the tape on the floor to the mock-up, fake set that gets built, everything. It's just really exciting to come into the room with your other creative peers and no characters exist day one. And then 4 weeks later, there are these very real characters who you feel like you could almost call up somewhere, you know, that's how alive they are. So I miss rehearsal. And then I think there's also just I was saying before, there's something about that community too, you know, the aliveness of it, being in a room that's hot, you know, that's meaning this audience is with you. Like there's no do-over, you know, there's no back to one. There's no, you know, it's just, when we press play, we go until the end of the song. If you mean, you know, so it's like, I love that feeling. And there's something really just, I don't even know if the word exists, like magical doesn't take it far enough, but knowing when you do the show I did Sunday night is not going to be the show I did do Tuesday night. Right. It will have all the the lines and everything, but because completely different people are there, because I'm having this conversation with you today, right, is going to set the energy into another place where other discoveries will be made and the experience will be completely different for the people who come into that space, you know, or there will be things that might be different, let me say, not completely, things that might be different that that audience will experience. And it won't ever happen again that exact same way.
Do you find that, are there things that you have sort of developed over your work on screen that now you are carrying into the work you do on stage?
You know, that's a really good, a little, sometimes, sometimes. There are moments, you know, okay. So my first TV job, I had, Jodie Foster, she directed us on an episode of my first show, Orange. And she had given me a note that I wrote in my acting journal that I think just hit me and applied to no matter what medium, you know, a work that I'm doing. And she had said something to me she said, you know, you're just going to stand there and just say the words, you know, don't do any of the other movement that we have for the wider shot. And I said, okay, why, Jodie? And she said, because sometimes you go to the camera, Uzo, and sometimes you let the camera come to you. And I remember thinking that was such a massive note that hit me in a really powerful way. And I wrote it down because the camera is really only representative of the audience. Right. Yeah. And there are moments that I think sometimes you bring the thing to the audience. And then sometimes when I'm talking to Montrellis, I know when we're looking out at the top of the play and there's another moment towards the end, he and I right here, Ron. And I can feel that the energy is going out, meaning is being felt, but I feel like that is the audience, because the audience is participant as well in play in the theater, I believe anyway. And it made me understand, like, no, in this moment, this is when you come to us to get what we're saying to each other. This is for you to come into us. So that would be something.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I have to ask you not only about the costumes, which are, you have a number of really stellar costumes, and then you've got the nails, which are a whole other thing. Yeah. Do you ever, like, are the nails the kind of thing you can wear between shows, or do they come on and off, or how does
Well, these ones stay on.
Yeah, those, I see those. Yeah, those look great.
They stay on for life. The other ones come on and off between shows. They're press-ons that we double up on, do a little theater magic with my dresser, Kate Sorg, and I. But yeah, we had big conversations. Jen Muller, our costume designer, and I, and Kate and her vision, talking about the hair and the look and who this woman is, and, you know, this idea of armor, you know, and these women, we know these women, and how they, I know these women, I've seen these women, how they come into, go through the world rather, and there is a bit of armor that's a part of that way of presenting in the world, to be seen as you want to be seen, so people can't really see you. Mm. And if you do that, maybe they can't hurt you.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, that was a big part of it.
I feel like before we wrap up, we have to ask a really important question, because so much of the play is about the perfect sandwich. What's your perfect sandwich? You, Uzo.
Oh, well, the perfect sandwich for me is the sandwich I've been having since I'm 13 years old. Lettuce, tomato, pickles, American cheese, turkey, extra mayo, on a hero, cold.
Awesome. What's in the sandwiches? You don't actually eat the sandwiches on stage ever, do you? Do we ever see you actually take a bite? I don't think we do. But what's in those sandwiches?
Oh my gosh. Well, some of them, I haven't gotten the chance to eat them.
Yeah,
they do have like professional, like they are professionally made. And my castmates say they are delicious. And I love sandwiches. So I'm like, I need to try them. They are absolutely delicious. Like, they really love them. They think they're just the most delicious thing they've ever had, but I've never actually tasted them. I stare at them longingly, and
yeah,
that's not
there's
a lot
of that.
Not a lot of that there. I'm like, I want that sandwich.
Yeah. And what's coming up for you after you're going to be in Clyde's until through, I believe it's January. And then what's next for you after that?
I have another project coming out soon that I will be able to discuss soon, and just continuing to work. Going to take a little vacation, I'm sure, and then jump back into work. We'll be able to share soon.
Well, we look forward to seeing you back on stage soon, sooner rather than later, we hope, and enjoy the rest of the run of Clyde's. It seems like it's a really good time on stage for you all.
It is, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Uzo. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
That was Uzo Aduba, now appearing in Lynn Nottage's Broadway play, Clyde's, running through January 16th at Second Stage's Helen Hayes Theater. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft, or give us a shout out on social media. Find past episodes and subscribe on all the pod places, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just Ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.